Wednesday night on The Fan pregame. Sportsnet is Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the next hour. Ailish and Justin here with you. And then we'll shift over to our Maple Leafs pregame show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan to tee that up. It's a 7:30 start. A lot of these 7:30 starts. I don't know how I feel.
Yeah, what's
about
going
them.
On this year? What, I don't know. Did we get away from 7 p.m.?
We did, but we have left the 7 p.m. realm.
I'm not sure what happened there. We're going to have to readdress in the offseason, I think.
So we got a little bit of a later start tonight, but it's Leafs at Panthers. Obviously, the lead game here on Wednesday Night Hockey. We're going to have Mike Fiuta in about 10 minutes. The Fan Hockey Show, we are going to pretend to cancel on him, but we're too kind to do that.
I still think we could probably follow through with the bit,
but
he may not be so kind to us if we pulled that stunt this late.
And then Ben Nicholson-Smith around 6:30 to talk about some of the moves we did see. Major League Baseball, Blake Snell being the main talking piece today, how that shapes the Blue Jays' interest, and where we're at with Juan Soto, because we're not going to stop that discussion anytime soon. We'll go through quite a lot today. Then, as I said, we'll go on to our radio-only segment at 7:30, get you set for puck drop tonight. But let's start with our biggest question of the day, and we'll open up our text line for you listeners at 595-90. Standard message and data rates apply. No Matthews tonight, again, but when he comes back, let's just say it's this weekend, what would you do if you were Craig Berube? Would you play Marner Matthews together? Would you keep them apart? Let us know. We'll try to go through as many texts as we can over the next hour and a half. But it has been nine games here without Austin Matthews, and I guess it's a good evaluation period if he does come back. What have we learned about the Toronto Maple Leafs who have went 7-1 without him?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's something we already know that the Leafs can win without Austin Matthews being 7-1 in his absence, extending an already impressive record without the number one goal scorer, maybe in the franchise's history. But I think the main thing and the thing that's actually applicable and can be applied moving forward here for the Maple Leafs is that like they're so painfully obvious a three-line team when it comes to the core four. They've been trying to play them all on two lines, and sometimes it came at the expense of William Nylander, but most of all, you're right, and it goes to the text question, Matthews and Marner staying together. We've seen it across iterations, across coaching staffs, and clearly when they are playing without each other, they raise their level. So why wouldn't, in theory, it work having them separated, at least in terms of a five-on-five unit, when they are both healthy and playing for the team? Could you not get those really good individual efforts and leadership moments from both of them simultaneously across different lines? It's just, this team has been a two-line team when they've had their full complement of players. They've been more than that when they've been missing players. It just seems so obvious that they need to be more than a two-line team moving forward, and that means that, in all likelihood, 34-16 should not be playing together when they get to that point, at least for me.
Yeah, and I think we spend a lot of time talking about Mitch Marner's stretch of hockey, and deservedly so. He's been unbelievable, and I think it just shows that maybe not an over-reliance on Austin Matthews, but maybe when you have the best player on your team and the guy that's making the most money and the guy who scored almost 70 goals, like, you do sometimes funnel through him. And some of the biggest stats that show a difference, you know, they played 13 games with Matthews and 8 without. The difference in, let's say, their power play went from 10% success rate to 32.5% success rate, just with the change of one thing. And not to say that Austin Matthews shouldn't be on the power play, but maybe it's just the mentality, right, of where you're forcing pucks. We've seen a lot more offensive production from Marner, from Nylander and Tavares. And I think there's something to be said about like a little bit of internal competition too. You get a moment to be the guy, you get a moment to be the lead player on the team, and Mitch Marner has totally captured that and run with it. So a couple things like that. I mean, their goal differential is plus 12 in this time without Austin Matthews, and their goals per game pretty similarly around 3, but their goals against per game is almost cut in half. So they're playing better defense, their structure, they're playing like smart Craig Berube hockey, which is a bit more north-south. But I think what we've learned in this stretch without Austin Matthews is that the Maple Leafs might have one of the best goaltending tandems in the NHL. Stolarz and Wall have been one of the reasons that these scores have gone in favor for the Maple Leafs, why they've been able to be so successful. And when you look at the stats, like, they're second, tied for second in goals against average in the league over this entire stretch. Their special teams save percentage is third. Their even strength save percentage is sixth. And their team save percentage in general is fourth. There's not many tandems that are better than these two, and I think it's just amplified the importance of the signing of Anthony Stolarz this offseason and how great this duo looks together, the Maple Leafs are way better for it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Matthews' absence, how connected are these things? I'm not really sure. I think there's probably an attentiveness that has gone through the roof a little bit in that, okay, we don't have Matthews, so we're definitely relying more on the one line, that stack with Marner and Tavares, and they're taking that opportunity and running with it. But down the lineup, I think probably, hey, these guys are all doing exactly what Craig Berube wants, which is cutting down on the chances against and helping elevate what is a very, very talented goaltending tandem. Mm-hmm. As you just mentioned, them putting them in a position to do their best work. And that will change a little bit when Auston Matthews come back. It will change if it goes to my plan, which is spreading the talent across three lines, because yeah, all three of those lines are going to be thinking about scoring, not necessarily defending. You're probably going to get some of those lapses, but just to the point I was making earlier about the three lines, like, it's a compliment to everyone. We've seen Matthews do it where he's not carrying replacement level players, but not players who are necessarily established guys who run their own units. We saw it with Max Domi, Matthew Nyes has taken a step. Clearly, we've seen William Nylander do it time and time again. And this isn't saying that Mitch Marner needs John Tavares, but he really elevates, and John Tavares helps elevate in turn him as well. It's just a tandem that works really, really well together. So if you have three forces that draw three lines, yeah, you're still going to have to learn how to play the Berube style, and it's going to have to look a little bit more like it's looked a little bit lately with all that attentiveness and that detail that we've seen in their games. But that's part of the process. And what takes from that process, I think, is just the stacking them in one unit or two units and the one puck theory, where it's just like, yeah, you could do more if spread across, if you guys are impacting more of the game because there are more shifts where you're involved. It seems like it's kind of really shone the light on something everyone was talking about until they were forced into this position. And I think when they can start moving forward on that, working on the details, then the best version of the Maple Leafs will reveal itself.
And our text line is open at 590-590. Standard text and data rates may apply. And a lot of people are saying no, don't play them together when they return. I think that that's a pretty fair assessment. You're making the same point. And I think if it's not broke, don't fix it, right? I think there's a crutch at times to put things back together. We saw it many times with Tavares and Nylander, like, let's put things back together. And then there's the Sheldon Keefe approach where there was the blender whenever something went wrong. I think right now you could tell the team is really working on a lot of like confidence and positivity and momentum. Not to say that crashes if you put these guys back together, but why can't there just be, you know, three balanced lines or two balanced lines? And I think that this is the consensus in our text line. And we could read a couple, Todd and Kaladin, he's saying, hey, I would leave Marner where he is, put Matthews anywhere else, perhaps with Domi and a third. Balanced lines, I just wonder with Matthews back Saturday if the team takes their foot off the gas because he's back. I mean, that's an interesting thing too, right?
And Nyes has emerged in that you're still working the pairings thing with Nyes and Matthews potentially, and then Tavares and Marner and Nylander driving his own unit with whoever it may be. But it also, like, this isn't set in stone. If you're chasing a game, yeah, you can throw three of them on a line together as opposed to two. You can play the fourth line less if you're worried about ice time and trying to make sure that William Nylander's not getting 15 minutes a night. There's definitely ways in which you can still throw those incentives in there and make sure that one of them's not feeling like they're disenfranchised in any way. This can work. And I think part of the reason they've been resistant to it is that you don't want to ruffle a feather. You don't want to make someone play 15 minutes a night. They have to get over the feathers. Exactly.
Whatever.
They have to get over it if they're going to get to the best version of themselves.
I agree.
And this is part of it.
And I think maybe that's where Craig Berube can be different. Maybe Sheldon Keefe had more of a relationship with these guys. You know, he had been in the organization for a lot longer. Maybe we had seen him be apologetic at times, right? Where it's like, oh, I didn't mean to say that about our star players. But I don't think Craig Berube is like that. I think he doesn't care about ruffling feathers. And if it means that somebody feels slighted because they're not on the top line, then so be it. You get paid $11 million. And this is a great text from Jay David in Toronto. If Justin Timberlake could go on a tremendous success without the rest of NSYNC, so can Auston Matthews. Split them up. Bye-bye-bye, Mitch. Keep tearing it up with Johnny Toronto. My apologies in advance for this text.
There you go. I mean, not every solo career, I think, worked for NSYNC in the aftermath of NSYNC, but I see the point. It's a good text.
Yeah. And what about the confidence that Marner, like, not that we need to just, you know, cater to people's individual feelings, but right now there's definitely a lot of confidence that Mitch Marner is getting, we can move the contract aside. And I know the dollar signs start to go in your brain when you think about the money he's been making. But a confident Mitch Marner going into a stretch where he's playing for something more when the playoffs matter. We all know, like, the playoffs matter the most. Well, if he's feeling like he can drive a line, he can be one of 1A, 1B, and not, you know, number two in line. I think that's worth it for himself in general.
I mean, the fastest way to make the most money would be to outperform a Matthews line, not be the caddy for Austin Matthews. And that's a bit, you know, maybe that's a stretch to say he's that. But in no way in a line or on a line that includes both of them would he be the main focus. Mm. Like, that's just not how it works. Even subconsciously, just how they're going to play on the ice, it's Marner deferring to Matthews because that's the dynamic between them. But when Marner's not in that situation, he can take more ownership. He can define himself more specifically and accurately as a player, and he can go to the bargaining table with more chips to play.
Oh, like, yeah.
I think it behooves him to actually want to run his own unit. Yeah, that's the dictionary.
That's a great word.
Use of the dictionary.
A lot of suggestions here have Matthews being with Domi in some sense, whether it's with Knies or somebody else. And I think Domi's a really important point of this moving forward. Obviously, he's not in the lineup yet, dealing with an injury himself. But a way to get him feeling like he's contributing, he's important, he's a valued member, that is huge, because he has been one of the most, like, disappointing players of the stretch so far, considering financial investment and him having a role that he just hasn't, like, risen to at this point. So maybe there's a connection with those two, not having to elevate and, like, lower your play to pick someone up. But I see a lot of Matthews and Domi in our text line, and I think it's a smart point.
That's certainly the other side of it. Like, Marner doesn't need someone else. Matthews doesn't need someone else, at least in terms of a superstar. Tavares, maybe. Mm-hmm. But the other three can do it themselves. Domi's got to play with one of them.
Yeah.
Knies probably has to play with one of them. Pacioretty's got to play with one of them. There's enough chairs here in this game of musical chairs for it to all work across three lines and make sure there's utility up and down the lineup. I can't imagine they would go any other route, but I guess we'll see when Austin Matthews finally comes back.
Okay, let's ask our first guest of the evening, Mike Fute of the Fan Hockey Show, joining us. Futes, we appreciate you coming on. We kept our promise, and you have joined us on the show. We're happy to have you.
Well, you guys were safe. It was the producer.
He's a problem.
He was heading to Houston's.
Oh, that's Houston's a good one.
A little BizNet six pack. So anyways, no, I'm just kidding. That's awesome. Always a pleasure to join you.
Yeah, we're excited. We got a great game tonight on the network. Obviously, the Leafs-Panthers. We used to use the word litmus test a lot when we were on the morning show together, and I feel like tonight's a great one. You know, you got a couple Leafs coming back to get their Stanley Cup rings, three of them exactly, and you've got Stolarz and Bobrovsky going head-to-head tonight, and a team that's on a winning streak and a team that's on a losing streak that have a lot of history together. I don't think there's much more you would want out of a Wednesday night game. Do you view this as something really meaningful for either side?
I do, Ailish. I think it's fun for Toronto fans. I think you're going against the champs any way you slice it. I mean, 2 years ago, they ended the Leafs season, and, you know, they are the champs. And there's been nothing but, there's been a couple little hiccups along the way. But so far with the Leafs, it's been fun to watch. It's so this time of year to be talking about goaltending depth being a strength and how tough it is to play against our defense. And, you know, man, we don't have Matthews. We don't have one of the best players in the world, and we still haven't had a hiccup here. There's a lot of things to be positive about, but there's something to say about going in. I'm sure there's going to be some people that if it doesn't go well, are going to, you know, burn the TV and stuff like that. But it's a good test for these guys because they've really stuck to a plan. And the thing that I've always looked for is some changes from what you've seen in the past, because obviously they're going to be graded. And trust me, Ailish, I'm not going to make you do a full report card on grades.
I already did that once.
Trust me, I don't always draw off the road to having you do it. But it's one of those things where you literally, it's a good test for these guys. It's a really good test because you want to see things different. And now we've seen teams come in that they technically should be better than, and they don't cough up points. They did it a little bit early on the back-to-backs early in the season, but they've improved. They followed up really good games with other games, and some teams have come in and they haven't had all their best on certain nights. So they find different ways to win. And that's, I think that's what's really fun to watch about this group. And I heard you guys, I've been listening. So I heard you talk about the lineup changes and stuff like that. And it's probably good. It's probably really good for a dress rehearsal to be able to find out what the team looks like without Matthews, because unfortunately last year they found out in the playoffs. Yeah. Right? So it's just, you've got to be prepared for any type of adversity, and the fact that these guys have been allowed to put some distance between them and the rest of the pack, and maybe combat Florida for the home ice advantage for the whole stretch. I think it's a real tribute to the team that Treliving's put together so far, and the fact that these guys have really bought into Berube and what they've done up to now.
What's going on with the Panthers right now, Fuchs? Four straight losses, losers of 6 of 7. You've been in a situation where you're trying to stay on top after multiple, you know, deep runs. Of course, you won in 12 and 14, which was not back-to-back like the Florida Panthers are dealing with, in an effort to try and go back once again. But so many playoff rounds, so much experience late into the season. Are we seeing the impacts of that now with Florida, or is this just a little hiccup with a team that, you know, knows what it is and where it has to go, but understands that you can kind of cruise control it a little bit?
You know, I don't dodge questions, Cuddy, but that one is one's probably going to be better answer about 3 hours. Because they're honestly a team. Like, I know the one thing I found about being fortunate enough to win a couple times with Dean, it's a lot harder to stay on top of the mountain than it is to climb the mountain. Once you get there and you get that taste and to go the distance the 1 year, I don't think this is a fatigue thing. I think they've added some new bodies. I think there's the emotional factor sometimes, like for today, when you have three guys that you basically fell in love with come in and you got to give them Stanley Cup rings and they'll compete against them. These are problems that anybody would like to have. But until you're actually on that side of the ledger and you found out that you've moved on from some great players and great teammates, it's hard to adjust sometimes. And this team, the one thing, that's what I love about Maurice, and I think someone like Tkachuk will be really interesting for me tonight to watch Tkachuk, because he's showed more emotion about places that he liked and teammates that he's had, and still plays the game like the nastiest individual in the barn. So he has his friends, and the way he talks about, you know, his trips going back to Calgary, and then talks about certain teammates that, you know, that he's loved, that he's moved on from. And, you know, the way he talked about Johnny Gaudreau, but he finds a way to pull up his work boots when it comes time to work. And I think tonight's a real test for the Florida Panthers as well, because they're relatively healthy. And the two times that Boston's come in, tested them, they've brought a game that kind of smacked, probably led to a coaching change quicker than we would have thought in Boston, because they have that ability to adjust to Maurice. Maurice clearly is masterclass with his verbiage and his, I mean, the other night when he was laughing with the girl on the bench about, as soon as you leave here, I'm going to lay into my team so could you get off the bench, cause I'm about to break swearing. But like, you've got to have confidence. And that's a comment you make when you know, you've got a ring in the shelf. But he's a special coach and his players really care about him. But this will be an interesting one, because the majority of the players coming in, so far those bowls where teams are supposed to live up because you're coming back to play an old coach, or they haven't really gone as planned. So this will be interesting tonight, knowing that Stolarz is going in against his old, you know, his old starting goaltender. And he's been arguably one of the best goaltenders in the league. So I'm sure his team's going to want to rally around him.
Yeah, are you interested in Stolar's performance tonight? You know, it's been unflappable. Yeah. It seems like since he's been a member of the Maple Leafs really his entire career, I don't know if there's been that like emotional out of character situation that's even been in front of him at all. I can't recall one, but this is different, right? You're getting a Stanley Cup ring. You're up head-to-head with Bobrovsky. You know these guys so well. This is like a prove-it moment despite the season. Definitely be a prove-it season. This is the prove-it moment within the prove-it season, if that makes sense.
I think he's been proving it since he arrived with his bag over his shoulder in camp. And I love that about him. And he's one guy I don't know a lot about him personally, but I've done homework because of, you know, obviously doing the show and stuff. But I mean, going back to his London days, and then this guy's the guy. There's something there that's special, and sometimes it takes a little while to unlock it. What we see with goaltenders, sometimes they don't flourish till later. And I would be shocked if it's something that we're talking about that he, like, if they don't win tonight, I don't think they're going to be saying it's because Anthony Stolarz. That would really surprise me, the way he's presented himself. There's been no semblance of internal, I'm worried about, wow, Joseph Woll's playing really well now. It's kind of like, hey, I'm going to take care of my business. That's all I can control. And it's almost like he's learned little lessons along the way that are presenting what we're seeing in him in the net on a nightly basis. So, yeah, I think it would be a the only setback, if all of a sudden he looks like he's lost in a, you know, oh my God, this is too much. I just don't see, I don't think we're going to see that at all. Regardless of the result, I think Stolarz is going to be fine tonight. And I'd be really surprised if the way this team has battled for each other, that tonight's not, regardless of the result, because you do have to take into account who's out of the lineup. I think you're going to see a team tonight that this, the Leafs look at this as a night they really got to compete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this is one of the ones I think you circle on the calendar for a couple different reasons. So it'd be good to have two teams at the top of the division as well going head-to-head. I want to ask you about Craig Berube and how he's changed his team. Now, we talked about it a little bit at the top of this segment between Justin and I, just how different the teams looked without Austin Matthews. But I just mean in general, like how they're playing a little bit stronger defensively. It feels like this team looks and feels a little different than, you know, a Sheldon Keefe-led team in the past. Like, what is it for you that's been the biggest change over the last 20-something games of Maple Leafs hockey under Craig Berube?
Now, I don't want to, and I'm a huge Berube fan, but there's been something about his genius and his bravado, but his almost naivete to some of the stuff that Leaf fans are so used to. And it started from the second exhibition game when the person was like, is it time to press the panic button? And he kind of has this like look on his face that I've seen a few times, like, what was that? What does that mean? And then there was a, I think there was an early in the season, I think when Jason Roberts or when Robertson, when he pushed Nylander forward and Nylander got whacked like on the back check there. And he went down and he kind of looked at his trainers like, why is he lying on the, why is he going to the dressing room? Like there's certain things that he's noticed that he's probably cleaned up quietly. The thing I like about this team is they seem to pleat and it like Reeves has been out and I'm a fan of Reeves. Didn't like the, I believed he could be suspended for the right reasons, but sometimes you feel that you have to be, you're only brave when you have somebody like that in your bench. And I've loved the fact that you've seen different things at a certain guys, that it's a different league. You can go in and manage scrums without having a heavyweight. And the fact that we've seen Austin Matthews throw cross checks and scrums and, you know, John Tavares wrestling guys to the ground. And you're not going in there. You're not all of a sudden looking for, you know, like you're going to Houston's with Biss. It's you're looking at a team that's learning how to play tough in scrums, and it doesn't hurt to just go in and just show you're not scared. And I call it, I mean, we always called it scrum management, but it was amazing working with the skilled guys, how you realize when you go in there, just go in, show up, just show up. And I see this team and those things showing up. And even the other night, I mean, I didn't dislike, I mean, everybody's discourse with the big hit on Nyes. Once I saw it, but I love the fact off camera, what was going on, how they were handling. Like I said, it's going to be funny because they don't, this would be a job. Reeves has got to go talk to this guy. And he wasn't in the lineup. So it was like, as soon as the play went, I said, I bet it's going to be McCabe. And sure enough, McCabe went right over to the box. He addressed him. He followed him right back to the bench, addressed him. And the game was so, you know, it was such a close game that it didn't go from there. But these guys seem to really have each other's backs. You're seeing guys like McCabe, American guys that originally had no trade contracts to Canada, waive those no trades to sign long-term extensions because they like what they see here and their chance to win. And again, there's going to be downtimes. And again, the biggest downtime, even if you're buying in, is the adversity of this team was really good last year and they start the playoffs. You don't expect to start the playoffs without Matthews and Nylander. So there's going to be things that happen that are out of their control, but this is a feel good situation. And when you do well like this, it allows Brad Treleving and his staff to look and say, this is pretty special what we've got going on. You can be more specific about what you need to add. Like Connor Timmins looks comfortable like right now. A lot more to be read, but the waving their back out to be able to move guys in and out and feel comfortable with your group to say, hey, maybe we do need a third line center. But there's no panic to what they're doing right now. And I think it's showing with, you know, the guys, the way they're interviewed, they sound a little different. But again, I know we're all going to have to wait to see what the end result looks like. But right now, something feels different about this.
We got about a minute, Futes. Mentioned three Leafs getting rings tonight. Stolarz, Lorenz, and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. In the 2012 and I guess 2013 and 2015 seasons, do you have any memories of guys coming back, getting their cup rings? Any special moments to share with former teammates coming back, getting rings after you guys won the cup?
You know what? It was funny because we were it was almost the same team turnover, right? Yeah. There was only like one, it's funny. There was only one or two guys. It wasn't as, I mean, it was more emotional having the guys that were part of both come back for their video tribute. Mm. You know what I mean? That part was very emotional, but it was pretty much the same group. I mean, I can tell you, and I only got a minute, but I won't have time to tell it. But I remember bringing a ring back to Toronto and giving it to one of my best friends, James Richmond, who now coaches in Brampton. And that for me was emotional, being able to have grown up with a guy and be able to hand him his Stanley Cup ring in front of his team. But you can't, those things are surreal, really, when you think about it, where you, especially if you didn't have a playing career, like mine was very humble, to all of a sudden be even included in that stuff is, it's beyond humility. And it's pretty special. It's pretty special. Yeah, and that's why my mom hides them.
I was just going to say, where are they? They're hidden away in the safe?
They're locked up in Midland, Ontario.
All right. The next time I'm up there, I'm going to start knocking on doors to see if I can find her. That's great. Well, Fuse, we're glad we could get you on. Appreciate it. Enjoy tonight's game. We'll talk soon.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks so much.
That's Mike Fiuta of the Fan Hockey Show, of course, Stanley Cup champ. Times over. Okay, so we'll take a quick break because we're gonna have a little bit of time to talk to Ben Nicholson-Smith, little Blue Jays / MLB touch point. All right, it's been a bit quiet until today, but Blake Snell off the market, and what does that mean for pitching market for the Blue Jays, and how the Dodgers just continue to defer money? Like, if you're Black Friday shopping now, you can do this thing where it says like pay in the future now.
Can you?
Oh yeah.
You got to show me that.
Oh, I'll show you where you could, like, let's say you're buying something.
I wouldn't mind deferring a little payment.
You can defer payments now on almost everything online. So if you buy a
what's the interest
mattress, I might have just bought one. There's an option to pay for it or to use like PayPal and pay in advance or this other thing like Affirm where there are some fees.
Okay. I don't want to get into the
fee game.
So
the Dodgers, though, are like,
no fees with
doing
the Dodgers,
this.
Right?
No, they're smart. But one day it'll hit their account. They'll be like, oh, wait, we have all like,
that was a costly five
million.
World Series we won in a row.
They'll be happy about it. All right, we'll do that. We'll take a look at some best bets for tonight, and then we'll have a little bit of time to tee up Leafs and Panthers on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So we'll come back. We'll talk to BNS. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ahead of Leafs Panthers, 7 o'clock across the network. We'll have it on Sportsnet 590 The Fan as well. And in about 30 minutes, we will shift over there and do our own pregame show. We'll talk to Christina Rutherford as well of Sportsnet. We mentioned it. The Dodgers are payment plan pros. They've now secured $964 million. Why are you laughing?
Funny.
$964 million of deferred payments since July.
So almost
$1 billion. 2020. Yeah. We know the Shohei Ohtani one, but they got Mookie Betts, Blake Snell as their list. Today that happened. Freddie Freeman and Will Smith. They're the second highest tax team in Major League Baseball with a tax payroll of $324.5 million. But yeah, they did it again today. Blake Snell locking in. This team's getting better and better and better.
Yeah, I mean, there are only a couple franchises, I think, that could put $1 billion aside and we'll be like, we'll address this later. But the Dodgers are in that position. And I guess they're kind of the envy of baseball, but also now clearly the villains of baseball. And they're only going to continue to add, it seems, because the group isn't yet, you know, fully formed around Shohei Ohtani, who might be the most powerful magnet type athlete.
Yeah, they're still in the mix for a lot of people.
Sports. Like he made them already a destination, but he's made them something even beyond that. And I don't know what it's going to look like for baseball when we get there, but nothing is going to stop the Dodgers in their attempts here to continue to make a super team.
All right, let's bring in Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet at the Letters Podcast. Ben, how are you? Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you guys. Doing well over here, right into off-season mode and pretty quiet for the Jays so far. So we'll see where all that leads here in the next little bit.
Okay, so let's start with the Blake Snell contract because that's today's news. I feel like I'm seeing a bit of maybe mixed reviews online of just how the Dodgers are approaching business. It's you're allowed to do it, but I think there's a lot of envy. And a lot of people say it's bad for baseball, it's good for baseball. But it's just maybe baseball now. Is this how we will view the Dodgers and their way of doing business and moving forward?
Yeah, it's definitely good for the Dodgers. And Blake Snell added to that rotation with Yamamoto and Tyler Glasnow and Ohtani. I mean, they're pretty stacked rotation wise. Kershaw probably coming back to them at some point. Dustin May. I mean, they're it's an incredible team. The win in the World Series was not a fluke. They're an awesome team. I think like for the Dodgers to really ascend to true villain status, they've got to win more than one World Series. Mm-hmm. Like if they win two, okay, like we can have a bit of a conversation about them as villains. If they win three, for sure, we can have that conversation. As of now, they've won one World Series. Like I know they won in 2020 as well, but I just don't even think they're anywhere close to where the Yankees were in the late 90s as far as actually being a villain. I think they have a long way to go. So at this point, good for them. But, you know, it's baseball, right? Like they could be knocked out in three games in the wild card series by the Pirates in, you know, next October, and then they're gone, you know? So I don't think they're full villains yet.
They got to be like a little bit more unlikable too, right? Because I think everybody likes Shohei Ohtani, Teoscar Hernandez, of course. Yeah. I enjoyed watching him win a World Series, frankly. I think they're a little too likable to be villains, but they'll get there if they keep winning and they keep spending the way that they have so far this offseason and I guess the last couple offseasons. Okay, the big news, though, is Blake Snell. And I guess there were some murmurs that the Blue Jays could be connected to Snell. He signs a really big ticket. It's an expensive free agent deal for the guy who couldn't find that money a year ago. We've kind of got the understanding here that the Blue Jays are interested in grabbing a starter, maybe a frontline starter. Mm-hmm. Seeing the Snell deal, how does it, you know, reverberate to Jays land? How does it affect maybe their interest in actually landing a starter of that ilk?
Yeah, they're still interested in adding a starting pitcher, guys like Max Fried, very much on their radar, Corbin Burns on their radar as well. So they would like to ideally add a starter of that caliber. Now, as for Snell, I mean, at that price, that's a pretty steep price. I don't think the Jays were, you know, right there dollar for dollar with the Dodgers. You know, you could look and look at the implications for the rest of the division as well, where the Red Sox, the Orioles, they're teams that could use frontline starting pitching too. So I guess if you're the Blue Jays, you're glad he's in LA with the Dodgers as opposed to, you know, signing with the Red Sox. But Boston probably will add. They probably will be aggressive. Baltimore needs to make some moves too. And obviously so do the Jays. So that's why they're looking at starting pitching. They want to add a starting pitcher and a bat. And I think they'll do both those things. It's really more a question of when and how good are the players that they eventually add.
We know they want to add a bat, and we know that they met with Juan Soto. Have you heard any tidbits, any sprinkles, breadcrumbs, anything from that?
Forensics on a breadcrumb.
Yes. Anything about that meeting with the Blue Jays?
No, I do not have any.
Come on, Ben.
Yeah, no, I wish I did. Last offseason was a whole other trip.
Yes,
you know,
it was.
Singers and, you know, the whole ordeal. No, I mean, clearly the Blue Jays have interest in Juan Soto. It's real interest. That being said, you know, I haven't talked to anyone who actually predicts that the Blue Jays are going to get him. Mm-hmm. You know, the Mets, the Yankees, these teams are so deep pocketed. They both went on deep playoff runs. They both play in the biggest market in baseball in New York City. And they have owners that spend past the luxury tax on a regular basis, past the CBT on a regular basis. Steve Cohen, you listen to him talk, it's like this guy is ready to spend. So, you know, we'll see where it leads. The Blue Jays do have interest here, but they are viewed by people in the industry as a dark horse, not a leader in this, not a front runner in this. The Yankees and the Mets are driving this thing, and that's my belief based on the conversations that I've had.
I think that you make a good point, like comparing what the other teams can offer. Like, what would be the Blue Jays' selling point that we can give you the money you want? Like, what is it that maybe they could, I know they're a dark horse, but what is it that might be appealing to Juan Soto if you were putting together a pitch for the Blue Jays besides money? Is there something they can sell him on?
There's no way to land Juan Soto unless you, if you're the Blue Jays, there's no way to land Juan Soto unless you're the high bidder. I think it's that simple. Like, I don't think there's a way where, like, the Mets offer $30 million more, but he loves Toronto. Like, I can't see that. I really can't see that happening. So I think that the only pathway, and this applies to most teams, this probably applies to the Mets,
yep,
but I just think the only pathway to signing Juan Soto is to sign him, to offer him a record contract. Clearly he's going to sign for a record deal when he does sign, maybe a record AAV, but certainly a record in total guarantee. So is that 600 million or is that 700 million? That's what teams have to figure out now too, is, you know, they're not going to tell each other what they're bidding. Mm. So they essentially have to determine, without knowing what the other teams are bidding, how much do we bid for Juan Soto? And then the process will unfold from there. So yeah, I think, again, if you're looking to, you know, the most likely outcome here, it is the New York Mets, and then the Blue Jays have to figure something else out.
Yeah, second straight year, big game hunting. I guess they're in a better position now because they understood the pitfalls of not really having a backup plan last year with the big game hunting. I assume it's going to be a little bit different this year. But again, dangers of falling in the same trap here. It's not like everything else is moving, because really we've only seen Blake Snell and a couple other deals of maybe not that much consequence so far. But how are the Blue Jays preparing themselves to better deal with the fallout and the very real possibility of not getting Juan Soto?
Yeah, they're working on multiple fronts, really, because you just can't assume that you're going to get a player of this caliber. Even if circumstances were different and they were kind of a favorite, which again, they're not, you still can't assume it. Like, the New York Mets have to have contingency plans too. So the Jays definitely have those. They're working to, you know, understand the entire pitching market with a focus on starting pitching. They also have interest in a lot of hitters out there to see how they can augment their lineup, because this lineup needs help too. So they're looking at everything. And like you said, I mean, they have to be ready to pivot quicker and better than they did last year, because the IKF, Justin Turner, Kiermaier, Yariel Rodriguez offseason led them to a last place finish. They need to hit on some of these names that they signed this winter. And it doesn't have to be the biggest name out there. I mean, we saw with Robbie Ray and the Jays, I want to say 4 years ago now, that was a huge signing, head of Cy Young, relatively low cost, great. But they need to kind of replicate that, because they have to overcome a lot of ground. I mean, they're the last place team in a really good division. They have a lot of work to do.
Any sense of how the Vladdy camp might be digesting all this, the second year of big game hunting, the interest in paying an exorbitant amount of money to Shohei Ohtani, the interest in doing the same with Juan Soto? Do we have any sense of how he's feeling about potentially entering a lame duck season again? There could be real discussions happening. There could be offers. There could be a Vladdy camp turning down offers for all we really know. But when there's money here and it seems like it's hardball for Vladdy, I just wonder how that affects the relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. I would hope that no player takes it super personally if you're going after Shohei Ohtani, if you're going after Juan Soto. These players are so good. I mean, you can't fault the desire to go after these guys. I mean, they're such good players. So hopefully Vlad Jr. is not taking that personally, but at the same time, this is a player who has a ton of leverage right now, and he's less than 12 months away from being the top player available in free agency. He would be the number one ahead of Kyle Tucker, ahead of anyone you want to put out there. Dylan Cease, like, Vladdy would be the guy this time next year. And that's got to be a tempting thing, right? To be 26 years old and be the top free agent out there. So I would think that if you're going to have him overcome that temptation, you probably have to offer him something really good. And, I don't think that, I'm certainly not led to believe that there's some, you know, deal on the brink of happening there. I think it's more likely that things really, you know, pick up in January around the time they have to pin down that 2025 arbitration salary. That might be a logical time to pick up those discussions and see if there is some common ground to be found on maybe a 10, 11, 12 year deal for Vladdy. But yeah, the Soto thing, everyone's going to be watching. And I'm sure Vladdy will be watching to see what number Soto gets.
We're talking to Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet at the Letters podcast. So about a week ago, Blue Jays moved on from Jordan Romano, which I think was probably difficult given his history and his relationship to Canada and the city, but injuries and potential, you know, not having that recovery to where they wanted it. How are they going to, A, replace this hole of Jordan Romano? And do you think it was like a difficult decision for them to have to move on from someone who a lot of fans really liked? And like, not, it's not always about the fans, but there was a bit of a relationship there.
For sure. Yeah, I would think that was definitely a difficult decision. Mm-hmm. Even if you think about, you know, how many of these players that came up over the course of the last 10 years or so have just been, you know, discarded in the last little while. And you know, Kevin Biggio, Tim Mesa, Danny Jansen, I understand. I'm not saying that these are like mistakes. I'm not saying that this is like some huge error on the part of the Blue Jays. you know, there were reasons for why this happened, but it is a real changing of the guard. And it's, you know, there's not necessarily that next homegrown wave that's popping up. I mean, Spencer Horwitz had a great season for himself. We'll see where that goes. But now you even have Bo and Vladdy entering their last year before free agency. So that raises the question of how great is this transition going to be? How quickly is it going to happen? And Romano's a part of that. So he had a great career here with the Blue Jays. I know a lot of people within the organization are, you know, rooting for him, hoping he does really well wherever he lands. And I think he's got more big league saves in him. Mm-hmm. But at that $8 million projected price, the Jays chose to walk away.
Yeah, I mean, it really does underscore concerns, the persistent concerns about this bullpen, though. Like, even if you were the most optimistic and you were just looking forward and thinking, oh, yeah, Jordan Romano will be back. Of course, they'll find a way to make that work. And now Romano's, you know, one of many potential departures, but also was one that you were maybe penciling in on what was already a thin bullpen going in. Like, they're going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting to get this group to be even league average, it seems. Like, how dire is the situation with the bullpen entering the offseason? And it's great going after a starting pitcher. That can affect the bullpen in the trickle-down way. But is this, like, almost impossible to recover this offseason?
I wouldn't go that far. I think it's possible. It's going to be really tough. And I agree with your assessment of, man, like, they have a lot of work to do. I think that there's no question about that. The nature of bullpens is, as you guys know, I mean, there's so much unpredictability there that you can have a kind of a quick bounce back, and they're hoping for that. But hope is not enough. They have to go out. They have to sign players. They have to find guys on minor league deals. They have to get the most out of their own players, guys who are maybe already on their 40-man that we might be overlooking right now. They have to find ways to get the most out of them. Last year, collectively, they did not do that. The results showed that. We all watched. It was a horrible bullpen. It cost them a lot of wins, and they need to do better. But I wouldn't say it's impossible for them to turn it around. I think that they need to be proactive, and they need to probably add, you know, free agents who we've heard of, free agents who have closing experience, and maybe some guys that we just really haven't heard of and haven't given that much thought to, but can pop up and can become someone who ends up making an impact in that bullpen.
When's the Juan Soto deal get done? If you had to put a timeline on it, week, 2 weeks?
I'll say December 10th at 9:30 Eastern.
I'm going to set an alarm right now.
A.M. or P.M.?
A.M. or P.M.?
A.M. I'm going to say it's a morning deal.
I love that. That's perfect for us. All right. We're penciling it in. Appreciate it. Ben, we'll see how close you are to that. Hopefully the Blue Jays have some stuff to do before that or after that. Appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend.
Sounds good, guys. You too. Anytime.
That's Ben Nicholson-Smith of At the Letters Podcast.
If it is 9:30, Ben can squeeze into the second block for the J.D. Bunkus podcast.
Yes, I hope J.D. was listening. You say December 10th? That is a Tuesday at 9-something a.m. Locked it in.
9:30.
So. Perfect.
Yeah, just looking at the bullpen now, like, who's under contract?
Yeah, name some names.
Scheduled to be with the Blue Jays this year, at least on any 40-man. Chad Green, Eric Swanson, Brandon Little, Ryan Burr, Bowden Francis, who could be starting games, and Easton Lucas. There's not much in the stable there for the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't know how you can, without cornering the market and deferring payments to the end of time, how they're going to get a bullpen that's even going to be competitive in the American League East. How that's not going to be a persistent issue beyond. Like, you can add starters, you can push guys. Alec Manoa, Yariel Rodriguez, are we talking about guys who can be in a bullpen? I'm not really sure, but it's just like, you got to make a lot of assumptions. And the more assumptions you make, generally by rule, the more room for error there is.
It's going to be a fascinating offseason, maybe the most important in Blue Jays franchise history. It depends what happens with Vlad. But yeah, it could be good. Quickly, want to remind our listeners about this awesome 50-50 that we're doing here at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And you can win a bunch of cash while doing the best thing this holiday season. It's Sportsnet 590 The Fan's 50-50 fortune, supporting food for kids. We've created a 50-50 lottery where the more money we raise, the more kids we can feed in the GTA, and the more you can win. The current take-home prize is over $287,000. That could pay for one pitch out of the bullpen. Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, they might have to have a couple cheap options. Maybe you can get a full inning out of someone for that price.
Okay, so someone's going to win that jackpot on Thursday, December 19th. And if you get your tickets early, there are more amazing early bird prizes, including two sports packages. One's a pair of tickets to an upcoming Leafs game and a signed William Nylander jersey. And the second is a pair of tickets to a Jays game and a signed George Springer jersey. So you can get your tickets by Friday, December 6th at 9 a.m. for a chance to win. And for more details and to buy your tickets, go to foodforkids5050.ca or text the word cash to 59590, and we'll send the link right to your phone. It's the 5050 Fortune, supporting Food for Kids. Standard message and data rates apply. Ontario only.
Where are you on the Dodgers ruining the integrity of baseball debate?
The thing I don't like, okay, I like when teams are aggressive and they go out there and they spend. But sure. The deferring the money thing, I haven't really wrapped my head around. I feel like it's cheating, but it's not. You know, I'm just like.
It's in the rules.
I know it's in the rules, but I'm like
and
that.
It's in the rules too. Like NHL teams can do that. One guy does it, Seth Jarvis, and all these teams suddenly want
to
do it.
Maybe I just need to get more teams doing it and not the Dodgers doing it to every signing
but
they ever
like,
make.
Clearly a team that's mom and pop compared to the Dodgers can't be doing that, right?
True.
Like you can't. So it is competitive advantage to the financially able team.
But I don't mind a super team. Like
I don't mind it either.
I just mind I need to pit my head around the deferring money.
I am a little fearful that they are going to be so super though that it's not fun.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, you can't let them also get Juan Soto and Roky Sasaki and
well, could you imagine if they got Soto?
No, like at that point, what are we doing? Like
it's actually
here?
Not fun.
No, it's not fun.
And Sasaki's probably going to go because Sasaki doesn't cost you anything because he's not of
he's like
age
free.
To be, you know. Yeah,
you don't have to defer anything.
For the Dodgers, he's basically free.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not like a horrible for baseball take when I saw it, but I was like, ah, classic. And then the deferring money makes me feel a little icky, but, you know, it's allowed, I guess. So anyway.
And then there's like a team that has more financial might in the Mets who just are clearly not doing things like at the level of the Dodgers,
but could.
Still could the Mets start could spending money and make it so that other teams can't compete for free agents. Like we're trending towards something that could be kind of unpalatable.
So the Mets, like I'm actually cheering for the Mets to get Juan Soto.
Are you?
Yeah.
Again, you said that, like, you know, the Blue Jays.
Okay,
had a meeting.
Obviously the Blue Jays, folks. But you know, let's use our.
You're trying to make money too.
Let's use our brains a bit. Ben couldn't think of a reason why you'd pick the Blue Jays besides
other
money
than cash.
Okay, so if the Blue Jays want to dish out $700 million,
he also said, "I agree." Like Ben knows way more, but like they,
he said
he
that
says
nobody,
they don't know what each other are offering. You don't think Boris is like, hey, the Mets?
Yeah.
The Mets are $50 million conservatively ahead of you. So if you're serious,
so pony up.
You better pony up. Like I'm sure there's some
conversations. But where I wanted to go with this is my best bet, which is Juan Soto to join the Mets. It's plus 200. It used to be a little bit higher than that. But now I'm just reading enough analysis from insiders that are saying Soto is going to the Mets. And if you can get it at a price of 200, then go for it.
Everyone is saying Mets. Like, I can't argue
I can't
with that.
Find anyone that's not saying Mets.
Seems like a good bet.
So plus 200. I don't think it's the Yankees. I think they missed their chance. I think the Mets would be a good villain arc. It goes across town. It's like, you know, the two teams hate each other. It'd be awesome fun. It'd be a great revenge series season ahead for him and lifetime for him. So I'm just going to go Mets here.
And he's got to deal with the Dodgers, though.
Yeah, but then
may
that,
not
but
do that.
The Dodgers makes this, like, kind of sad. So the Mets make it
no,
kind of
No, I mean like
villainous.
Him going to the Mets, at least like if you're Yankees, you can beat the Dodgers again, maybe in a World Series. Anyway, I think it's a good bet because everyone's saying Mets and it's plus money.
Okay, so go for it.
Leafs and Panthers tonight, of course. We've been talking about it for the majority of the
is that
show.
Tonight?
The over-under set at 5.5 minus 115. I think that's interesting because only Vegas and Colorado are playing in higher scoring games compared to the Florida Panthers. It's almost like the
Colorado
President's
doesn't
Trophy
have a goalie.
Year in some ways because... Yeah, they're scoring a lot. They're giving up a decent amount as well. And you mentioned that the goaltending problems are persistent. They're not for the Leafs. Leafs are playing in very low-scoring games. Only two teams playing in lower-scoring games. We'll talk about that a little bit more on the other side. But I do think the Panthers, you know, they're going to have their say in this game. And it's a pretty depressed number. Leafs and Panthers probably could get wild. I think the over 5.5 is a decent look tonight, despite what the Leafs have done in Austin Matthews' absence.
And Leafs plus money tonight. You never see that.
You see it sometimes.
Well, you see it barely.
And you're missing.
Yeah, it's just the
full line.
Just the thought for our listeners. You think about it. Okay. They've been really good without Austin Matthews, and he might be back this weekend. So, get your wins in while you can.
That's it. Go 8-1.
There you go. We'll take a quick break. We'll be up on Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the next half hour. Get you set for Leafs and Panthers, and they're up next on Sportsnet 1. We'll chat with you in 5 minutes.